Sound is.
Καλημέρα, Νικολάκη.
Καλημέρα, Αναστασίος. Πώς πας, my friend?
Good, mate. Good to see you.
Mate, it's an unusual time for us, isn't it?
Yeah, we usually record it of an afternoon, of a Saturday afternoon, but here we are doing a morning show.
I know. This is just ridiculous, isn't it? I feel like I just got out of bed.
I think I did.
I think we did, didn't we? Yeah, classy. Well, good to see you, mate. So
it is good.
What's happening today?
Very special episode today. We're talking about Greek Orthodox Easter.
My favourite time of the year, actually. I love it. The weather changes as well. It's, you sort of got rid of that summer feel, and it's that autumn feel coming in, and you're rugged up, and then all the families get together. It's a great time of year, mate. I love it.
You know what? It feels like we just got through with Christmas, and it's Easter already. Does that come with age? The older you get, you know, the closer everything gets. Yeah. All these milestone events.
Yeah, it is. It must be age, Tom. Christmas was just what, not long ago.
Yeah,
and we're in the 2022. It felt like we celebrated New Year's.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it is age. Maybe we drink too much. We've got to slow down.
It's been a big few weeks for Ouzo Talk, though, as well, hasn't it?
It has been. Yeah, it's been huge. Actually, and I guess congratulations are in order. We've just ticked over 52 countries around the world that have been listening to our podcast.
You're kidding. 52 countries.
Yeah, and Zambia was our 50th, would you believe? The people of Zambia. So we got someone in Zambia. A bunch of people listening to us.
Mate, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear it.
So greetings to our friends out at Zambia. And Kenya was our 51st country as well.
Wow, Ouzo Talk taking off in Africa.
Yeah, that's it. So hello to Africa, our greetings. We love you guys. I'm glad you're listening in. Hope you're enjoying the episodes. But more importantly, I just read a stat now from our site. And our top 10 cities, would you believe, there's a... Yep. I'll read them out if you like.
Yeah, please.
So the obvious one is Sydney. Sydney's number one. Melbourne, number two. We've got Athens at number three. Adelaide, yep. Four. Then we've got Toronto, Ontario. Brisbane. Then we've got Montreal, Quebec. Wellington in New Zealand, would you believe?
Cherbro.
And then we've got New York. Frankfurt. I'm not sure if I could pronounce this right. It's Syracuse in New Jersey. I hope I've pronounced that correctly.
Is that Syracuse?
No, it's S-E-C-A. Syracuse.
Okay. There you go.
Ends up our top 10. And then we've got like heaps on equal 11th. Markham, Ontario, Long Beach, California, Scarborough, Ontario, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Oslo, Los Angeles, Seattle, Johannesburg, Vancouver, British Columbia.
It's all over the place.
We have. We've spread our wings, haven't we?
We have, mate. We have. Great to hear. Well, like I said, this is an episode about Easter. Should we get into the episode, Nick? What do you reckon?
I think we should. And just before we go, quick cheerio to James Dimitaris from Melbourne. He's a listener of ours, Tom, and he's had a bit of bad luck recently. And he's on the mend, so he's on the way up. So a big cheerio, James, from Nick and Tom from Ouzo Talk. Hope all the best and recovery goes well.
All the best, James, mate. Okay. Well, let's do it, Nick.
Let's kick it off, mate.
Beautiful. We're not going to cheers today because we're actually not drinking any ouzo or anything that you can charge a glass with. We're just drinking coffee. It's early in the morning.
It is too early. So double shot piccolo down the hatch.
Absolutely.
All right.
No cheers. No cheers.
No cheers.
Oh, dear. But yeah, it is very early in the morning for us to be doing this. So this is uncharted territory. But
it is.
You know, we'll see what happens. We're early risers when it comes to Easter, when it comes to actually putting the Adonai on and doing all that sort of stuff, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We do get up early and start all that. Otherwise, we'll have the Yeneka screaming at us. You know, when are we going to eat? So we've got to get in there early. We've got to get it right. Otherwise, we'll hear about it.
Absolutely. And the way to, well, there's no better way to start the day off in a Greek household with either your Greek coffee, frappe, or a Freddo cap, right?
That's right.
What's your go-to definitely in the morning normally?
I'm down to an espresso. I think it's pure come out of laziness.
Yep.
Just a double shot espresso and that's it. But if I had a choice, if I had a orixi, I'd probably go a Freddo.
A Freddo.
Yeah.
How do you drink it? Freddo cap or just a...
Milk and sugar. Yeah. See, how do you drink yours?
I've actually recently shifted. So I've gone from drinking the Freddo cap to now... to recently going to a Freddo espresso with a little bit of Nunu, the evaporated milk in it.
Okay.
And now I've gone full Freddo espresso.
Wow.
Recently.
Okay.
So I've gradually gone hardcore.
Yeah. Is it the same as Greece, do you think?
It depends where you get it. Mooch and Me does a pretty good Freddo cap and a Freddo espresso. So. True. Good plug.
Yeah,
they actually do a very good Freddo espresso, if I'm honest.
They do.
But there's a lot of good places now that are cropping up that are doing it as well, which is fantastic because it's you can now get it a little more readily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's so many Greeks around in Sydney, so
absolutely.
The one that tastes of Greece, so why not?
Usually, my go-to though is the Greek coffee. I love a good Greek coffee, maybe with a little bit of sugar in it. I don't subscribe to this, this thing where it's like, oh, metrio, glyco, because it's like predetermined. I think metrio is like one or two sugars.
Yeah.
I think it might be one.
Mm.
And then the glyco is like three or something like that. Like it's a lot for a small glass.
Yeah.
But in true Ouzo Talk style, what I really love with my Greek coffee is putting a splash of Ouzo in it.
Yeah, okay.
It is fantastic.
Never had that. Okay.
If you haven't tried it. You've really got to give it a go. Yeah. I remember being on a ferry in Greece,
mm-hmm.
probably in 2016, 2015, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
We were going from Corfu to Igoumenitsa to eventually go on to Thessaloniki. Great place. Absolutely. Yeah. and I said to the guy, going and ordering a coffee, and I said, I want a Greek coffee. I go, and do you have any ouzo? And he's like, yeah. He sort of leans in. He goes, yeah. This is like, 7 in the morning, whatever. I go, can you put a splash in there? Yeah. He said, the Cosmo. He loved the fact that I, put a little bit of alcohol in my morning coffee, which I wouldn't do normally, but it's fantastic. You've got to give it a try.
Yeah. It's an acquired taste, isn't it, the Greek coffee? It's very sandy down the bottom.
It's crunchy.
It is, yeah. Gets thicker the more you drink it. Starts off nice and smooth and it gets thicker towards the end.
That's it.
Yeah, there was a place in Athens, I remember, where they had the piriki and they make you coffee and they actually use hot sand.
Hovoli, they call it. So, kafesti hovoli, I think is what they call it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
Just reminding me of a Greek church, all these candles, but there's all these brikis, with hot sand and...
They do it here too. I think there's a shop. I think they used to do it at Alevri in Marrickville.
Wow.
Dully Chill, yeah.
Okay.
Gotta give it a try.
Yeah, I think we have to, actually, yeah. Maybe I'll go down to the beach and grab some sand and heat it up. What do you reckon?
Well, I think the reasoning behind it is because it gives a more even distribution of heat, which makes the coffee boil more evenly or something along those lines.
Okay. Bit of theory behind it.
Absolutely. There's science everywhere when it comes to Greek stuff.
Exactly. Oh, mate, Greeks are all engineers when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah, we're hacking stuff all the time.
Can we make this better?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, but we want to get it better,
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Well, we're having our morning coffee and at this point it's still purely for effect. There's no enjoyment in it for me yet. It's purely to wake me up. But anyway, look, let's talk about Easter because we're in the middle of Lent right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up to it. It's probably the most important event on the Greek calendar. What does it mean to your family, Nick?
Yeah, for us, I guess it's all about family, family unity. It's a culture thing. Yes, it's about Jesus and so forth, but it's more about bringing the family together. It's a great time of year, and I just got really fond memories as a kid. Mum and dad, brother and sister, all my family, all my cousins. We go to church, and it's like a reunion at church. You see people you went to Greek school with or primary school or played football with. It's like a reunion of all the Greek community, and everyone dresses, puts on their best clothes and... Yeah, it's a great time. I actually look forward to it every year. Mm. Even now as an adult, I want to see experiencing it through my kids now. Just this, how funny is it? It's 11 o'clock on a Saturday and there's no one inside at the church and about 11:05, just a swarm of people just start to come in. It's like a tsunami of people. Yeah. All of a sudden, shit, where'd all these people come from?
And you go to Cogra, I think you said.
We do, yeah. That's our church. Yeah, it's huge. Don't quote me on the numbers, but all I remember was... church is full, they got upstairs, it's full. Everyone down the stairs full, on the main road, footpath full, road full, left and right of the road, which is goes about 50 metres either end. It's just packed. You know, I want to say thousands and thousands, but I'm sure some of you all know. But yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even just trying to get out, it's just a mayhem. I love it. I love
it's just as big. And I don't know if it's even bigger in some instances at St. Spiridon Church in Kingsford mm-hmm. here in Sydney.
Is that your church?
That's where we go to. Yep. That's where I was baptised and the whole family goes to. Big Greek community around mm. there, so mm-hmm. St. Spiridon Church. Mm. Again, one of the biggest parishes, I'd say, in Sydney.
It's definitely huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they shut off, every year they shut off all of, on either side of the church.
Mm.
And it is absolutely packed Friday and Saturday night. This is a big main road that they shut off. And yeah, it is just a sea of people every year. It's unbelievable. It's beautiful to see.
Yeah, no, it is. And even the Friday as well, when they do the epitaphio and they do the lap of honour around the church as well.
I just love how everyone calls it the lap of honour.
Yeah. I remember one year, a couple of non-Greeks, because you go around walking around the streets. Yeah. And they wanted to leave.
Yep.
And before they realised, a swarm of people holding candles were walking past them. And I remember there was one particular car with four people in it trying to get out of the street. They had parked and they couldn't get out. They were doing like, 5Ks and the people are walking, looking at them, giving them dirty looks as they're walking past their car. It was funny. So thinking, shit, what is going on here? There was no one here about an hour ago. Now everyone's walking past with candles staring at me, dressed to the nines, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Also, it's a bit of, when the epitaphio comes out, it's an honour, isn't it, to walk underneath it?
Yeah. So if you go, there's a lot of people. That was more of a tradition that I learnt in Greece when I was there for Easter a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing was, okay, the epitaphio comes out and, people are trying to go underneath it because it's a,
it's a good luck.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, it was always a case of you go, na proskinesis, you go up, kiss the icon of the epitaphio, whatever, take a flower from it. I don't know if that's part of the tradition, but...
Yeah, it's for good luck.
Absolutely.
Everything's for good luck.
That's it.
See, we're lucky guys, man, yeah?
We are, mate.
I did it one year too, I remember. It's just trying to get through and you got little old ladies trying to get underneath and you're trying to be respectful.
The season ticket holders.
That's right, yeah. The regulars, front row.
Yeah.
Mate, they know the priest by name. They do. But we did go through actually and I leaned up, grabbed a little flower as well.
Yep.
Yep, we're going to have luck for the year. But yeah, it's a big thing, isn't it, to walk underneath it?
Apparently so. I don't know the full tradition as to why, but I mean, it's important to mention, not everyone's particularly religious in the community, but despite that, it feels as though Greek communities throughout the diaspora tend to come together around our churches.
Mm-hmm.
It's morphed into something that's more of a family event as opposed to a religious one. The two go hand in hand. Is that something that you reckon is true?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a cultural thing. A lot of people probably aren't religious, but it's a cultural thing. It's something that we do. It's habitual. And it's all good. It's all about celebration and eating and drinking and being festive as well. So, but you're right. It's, I don't see that many people on church on a Sunday, but somehow they come out of the woodwork for Easter.
You've got to be at church on Sunday to know that. Do you go on Sunday?
I used to go. Sometimes.
I think we used to go Sunday morning for Kinonia when we would try to go. And that was that the Saturday morning or the Sunday morning? I can't remember whether there was literally a line around the corner to go for Kinonia.
Yeah, I think it was the Saturday.
The Saturday morning,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, it was the Saturday. Do you remember as a kid, I'd blow up. I think, oh, is this it? Do I finally get to eat my chocolate Easter eggs?
Yes.
And go, no, not yet. So I thought church on the Friday, okay, I get to open these beautiful Easter eggs. I used to have this Humpty Dumpty was my favourite.
Smarties with the Smarties inside. In it. Yeah.
And I thought, what a waste of space. It's all empty, but they filled it with Smarties. Oh, that's a great idea. Get more chocolate. But I could never eat it on a Friday. And then we had the Kinonisi on a Saturday. I go, Mark, can we have it now? Or keep it in my mouth. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, what a drag Saturday was, remember? Like you couldn't go to sleep. You're up at, 8, 9, 10. My God. You're half asleep as a kid, seeing all these beautiful chocolates. And then finally you get the green light. We go to church.
Yep.
And Yeah, that waiting period, that was I remember that was a killer.
And it's the signal to eat meat as well, obviously.
That's right, yeah. But we, unbeknown to us, we didn't realise we were vegans, you know, during the Easter period.
Yeah.
You know, like, we were young 6-7-year-old kids. I didn't know. Whatever mum cooked, we ate.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there was no meat, feta. Yeah, but it was a good time, actually. It was a really good cleansing diet for us, with unbeknownst.
Absolutely.
So we're probably the original vegans. What do you reckon?
Absolutely. I mean, we would eat things like briyam. So, like, for those who don't know, it's like a ratatouille type of thing in the oven. Araka, bizelya, as a lot of people know it. So, peas.
Store.
Yep. Yeah, so peas with potatoes and aguinares and all that sort of stuff. Just, fantastic. And you wouldn't realize that it's not that there's no meat in it.
Yeah.
Until someone in the family said, "We haven't eaten meat for a while," and then you can't get it out of your head for the next few weeks.
Yeah. I had a sweet tooth, so for me it was always about the chocolate. But yeah, we used to have, remember bamyas?
Yes.
Ugh.
Okra.
I used to hate that stuff. Yeah. But yeah, that's all we had to eat. We had that, fagesh, all the legumes and so forth.
Love fagesh.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I do now.
Yeah.
Back then it was like a drag. Oh my God.
Yeah.
How can you eat this stuff? Even just for the name of it.
That was always...
Fagesh and bamyas. Oh, I'm not eating bums. What's going on?
Everyone's got a joke about telling their friends about fagesh as a kid. It's like, what are you eating? Fagesh. What? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Oh. It means lentil soup.
Now, we've got a lot of words with that synonym, haven't we? Seal. How do you say seal in Greek?
Fokia. Yeah.
How do you say mousetrap?
Fucker.
envelope.
Fakelo.
What else is there? We got fuck yes.
Standing. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's it. There's four of them, isn't there?
Yeah.
So a seal, a lentil eating seal holding an envelope steps on a mouse trap. Say that in Greek.
That is outstanding.
Classic.
Oh, jeez.
No,
good stuff.
Good. So tell us about your experience growing up as a kid. Easter. What are your fond memories?
Everything was a lead up to that Sunday morning, when we would wake up really early. Me and my papu would go outside, start the karvuna, basically, for the, for the arni and, for the, what do you call it, the kodoshuvli or whatever we were going to have that day. Usually it would be a whole lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really involved from a really young age because I wanted to take it over very quickly, which I have now with my cousin Steve. So it was always about that. As a younger kid, I really liked going to church and seeing all of that, all of that thing and the service, the liturgy and all that sort of thing. I was really interested as a kid, became a little less religious, growing up, but still really... really enjoy doing it at that time of year and love, taking, my little one now as well. I think it's really important, that they have these special, these special events. As with everything, as you get a little bit older and you've got kids, it becomes more about them.
Yeah.
So it's more about, making it special for, making it special for them. For me personally, I was never really preoccupied with the chocolate side of it.
Okay.
And part of it is because I think my dad's got an obsession with chocolate.
Okay.
I'm going to tell a story. I'm going to out him again. I've outed Dad a few times on this podcast.
Poor Philip.
I know. Yeah, like I said, Dad's got this preoccupation, this obsession with chocolate. He's tall and thin, but he could eat as much chocolate as you can imagine and doesn't gain any weight now. For years, what would happen around Easter is, family members would bring us, the big chocolate eggs and, like the Humpty Dumpty. And we would put them all on this bar that we had at home at the time.
Like a display.
Yeah. where your family's got the kala, cristala. Oh,
that's right.
All of that.
We had a bar too. Yes. I remember that bar.
We had one as well for a while.
Full of alcohol.
The one that's got like all the good crystal glasses and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, as a display.
Yeah,
and underneath
it.
The bar was just full.
I remember
those kids. Oh my God.
Now the alcohol was in a separate place for us.
Okay.
But anyway, there was this little table there. And what would happen is people would bring us chocolate, family members, aunts, uncles, godparents, whatever. My brother and I would split it into two sections. So one side would be mine, the other side would be his. And what would happen over the coming weeks, we'd slowly chip away at it. This one year, though, someone brought me an egg shaped as a football, like a rugby league ball,
okay.
An NRL Easter egg, which was fantastic.
And you kicked it.
it took pride of place right in the middle of this bar, right? Yeah. A few weeks after Easter, we're chipping away at all this chocolate. And Dad's eating most of it. right? I'm having a little bit, but it's mostly for him.
Yeah.
So of an evening, Dad would say, you know, go and grab something. You know, go and bring some over here as we're watching TV. As all the chocolate was going, this NRL Easter egg gets left. And he keeps saying to me, come on, go and crack it. I go, nah, that's the only one that I really want. I could just leave that. That's going to be for me, you know, to have, you know, whenever I want. And he goes, nah, come on. You know, you're not going to eat all that by yourself. And he's, you know, trying to twist my arm about it. He got to the stage where, you know, 2 weeks had passed, 3 weeks had passed, and he's still getting into me about this egg. Mm. And eventually I said, look, I'm not going to bloody open it. You know, you've had all the rest of mine. Just be happy with that. Just leave that one for me.
Mm.
Anyway, so I walk inside, I had the shits, and I heard Mum say to Dad, why won't you just let him have that? Stop pestering him. You know, you've had all the other ones that he had. Yeah. And she goes, seriously, I'm surprised that you haven't, you know, cracked it open and started eating it from behind. And he goes, how did you know?
Oh.
And she looks at him.
Yeah.
She goes, you're kidding, right? And I can hear this, right? Yeah. I walk outside. So the egg was in this, you know, this cardboard box with plastic around it and whatever, and it was covered in foil. So I go and have a look. I open the top of it, and the back half that you couldn't see
missing.
Was all crumpled and was missing.
Philip.
There was thought put into this, right? He went and took a really sharp knife,
mm-hmm.
ran it under a hot tap, carefully peeled it, and started slicing into the back of it and eating it in secret. Wow. It was just leaving the front.
Very clever.
Okay. And I have a look at him. I'm like, you're sick.
Genius.
I go, I'm too impressed to be angry. I can just have it.
What a classic.
Good on you. Oh, jeez.
There we go. I think you do, eh?
Yeah.
Yes, you do. What a classic.
He's ill.
Yeah, classic. Mate, speaking of that bar, I just brought back fond memories.
Yeah, go on.
You know, look, like 16, 17. We used to sneak behind the bar. And I remember Mum and Dad had all these amazing scotches and ouzo bottles. And as kids, we weren't kids, like teenagers,
yep.
16, say, we'd sneak out behind the bar and have a look and, fuck, check out all those bottles of alcohol. We'd unscrew the lid and we'd fill the lid cap of the liquid with little shots, put the lid back on it and sort of crawl back out of the bar again as if nothing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, fond memories.
How drunk would you get with your cousins?
We didn't drink too many,
yep.
But yeah, we did feel a bit, how you going? Yeah, but that was my first taste of alcohol behind that bar, drinking out of a lid cap
yep.
of scotch. But yeah.
And would your parents Jerry or what? Would they realise?
I don't know, actually. I had an older brother, so yeah. I think he probably got the blame of it. Yeah, so it's probably Bill. You know,
yeah.
Drinking it. Little did I know, it was me.
Your dad's measuring all the bottles.
Oh, we had heaps. Like back then, name days were huge. So if someone would come over, we'd have like, you know, shitload of families come over and they'll bring a bottle of something.
Yeah.
So every year this thing would get bigger and bigger and we'd have so much alcohol. I don't think they'd even realise if anything went missing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, back to Easter. Yeah, they're good memories, Tom. I remember when I was a kid, we'd go into church. I think it was the Friday or the Saturday during the day. I remember the priest would walk down, or the priest's assistants, whatever they were,
yep.
and they'd move the chandeliers and they'd have these big cane baskets of bay leaves.
Ah, yes.
And they'd throw it to the crowd. Was that was meant to be what an earthquake? As soon as when Jesus died was the earthquake. I think
that's what it was. I can't remember which day it is that happens on, but yeah, there is a tradition where basically the priest comes out and they throw all this stuff. There's actually a really funny video on YouTube that's been used to death on a show called Radio Arvilla.
Okay.
In Greek TV, which I love.
Yeah.
And they took the piss out of this priest so bad.
Yeah.
Because there's this shot. They've set the camera up right down the aisle.
Yeah.
And what happens is the door of the altar
mm-hmm.
opens up. And the priest comes racing out, like bombing down the aisle, throwing leaves all over the place. And there's a jump. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So you're seeing rasa going everywhere. You're seeing leaves going everywhere. It's classic. Brilliant. But I'm not sure which day that actually is.
I think it's the Saturday morning. I think it's meant to represent there was an earthquake when Jesus died on the cross.
Right.
So he died on the Friday, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it would have been Saturday morning session. Yeah, and it was a big event. I remember it was huge. The season ticket holders would cop most of the bay leaves in the face. And it was funny, you watch everyone walk out at church and they got bay leaves in their hair and back of their clothes. And again, you had to grab one for good luck.
Of course.
Everything's good
luck. Of course. And the more you grab, the more luck you've got, right?
Yeah. I remember one year I saw one particular priest had like handfuls. He must have had the shits that day. He was just fucking branding it at people, just throwing it at people's faces. And the chandeliers were going, you know, virtually at right angles, sway. They're going, shit, what happened to this guy? Pissed off he had to get up so early.
There's some interesting traditions when it comes to Easter, and from all over Greece as well. I mean, we've spoken about a few, and maybe this is a good time to talk about some of those traditions. As you know, my family's from Corfu, and Corfu is one of those places that has some awesome Easter traditions, and so much so that a lot of Greeks actually go to Corfu during Easter to experience it because of the spectacle that there is. In particular, there's this one thing that happens on Easter Saturday, the Botides. I don't know if you've seen this, but basically...
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, so basically in the square, in the main square of Corfu town, what they do basically is they've got these big clay pots and they're painted red, or they paint them different colors, they fill them with water. And I think it's at midday or something along those lines. They actually throw them over the balcony and they shatter on the ground. And there is fair dinkum over 100,000 people in that square. It's unbelievable. I experienced it in 2019. First time in my life. I'd been told from a very young age that Easter in Corfu was pretty special. And I was just like, how special could it be? And people kept telling me, so special that people from other parts of Greece go there. I'm like, all right.
I actually see it on the news. It's actually huge.
It's massive.
The whole world focuses in on it.
Yeah.
Do you know what the tradition is? What does it represent?
So similar to what you were talking about before, the symbolism is to create an earthquake that's like the one that occurred following Christ's resurrection from his tomb. And perhaps it's to symbolize, you know, the cracking of the stone or the moving of the stone or something along those lines. Islanders also believe that it's to ward off bad spirits. And spectators basically take a shard from the clay pots because guess what?
It's for good luck.
It's good luck.
Hey, people from Corfu are very lucky, that's all I can say.
Absolutely.
What a classic.
We had such good luck that when I took my shot in 2019, we had COVID the very next year.
Yeah, fantastic. And look what's happened.
I know.
We've got a podcast out of it.
Absolutely.
See? There you go. You got your good luck.
That's it. But yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic spectacle. And like I said, the whole square is filled up. You know, and this is one of the biggest squares in Europe. And it is just a sea of people. And what happens is, I'd say standing room only. There's no standing room. You're literally sardines, right?
Okay.
And what happens is, because those people that are close to the buildings, they need to move back, otherwise they're going to get hit with a pot. What the owners of the houses and the apartments do is they start throwing water out of the windows a few minutes before to make sure that people move back. And when the bells at St. Spiridon start ringing, they start throwing things out the window.
Wow. So does this happen at midnight?
No, this is during the day.
During the day, like on during the Friday day. Or the Saturday.
I think it's the Saturday. That happens, all the marching bands, you know, there are like 20-odd marching bands on the island, you know, massive ones. They all start playing, you know, there's a whole thing that, you know, that happens there. There's a procession that happens.
Yeah.
And it is just mayhem for a few minutes there. All you can hear is, you know, things breaking everywhere. It's sort of ingrained into us, isn't it? You know, breaking plates, breaking pots. Yeah. You know, it's fantastic.
Have to break something.
Yeah.
Are there any injuries ever? Do you ever see any people get shards of clay pot in the eye? Or
it must happen. Everyone says, nah, it's never happened.
Yeah. You know,
but it must happen somewhere.
Says the guy with the missing eye. Nah, that never happens.
No, but it actually happens all over the island. So, you know, at that time, they do start throwing it out everywhere. And what my mum said as well, growing up, because she grew up in Corfu as well.
Yeah.
When they heard the bells at St. Spiridon and people started throwing things, that's the time that my papu would slaughter the Easter lamb as well.
Okay.
So when that happened, that's when that's the signal to start cutting.
Wow, shit. Yeah, is that why they don't have any old ancient terracotta pots in Corfu? Because
nothing's safe at that point.
They've been broken.
Nothing's safe.
No, we can't find any terracotta pots here. Everywhere else we do, except for Corfu.
That's it.
Some little kid grabbed and threw it out the window.
That's where pots go to die, mate.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because there are some people in that square that do they've got like a tradition. So there's one guy in the main square there that does a massive pod every year.
Yeah.
And he paints it in the colours of the island's soccer team.
Okay.
Anyway.
What colours are they?
Blue and red, basically. Blue and red.
Okay.
And he writes Awa Gedgeta on it and all that sort of thing. Yeah, so that's a big one. So everyone knows every year this is the one that's going to, you know.
It's like the grand finale.
Well, it's one of them. There's a few people that do similar ones, but they do massive ones. They stand up on the top of the building and they're, you know, signaling to everyone to count down, you know, from five, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, bang, you know. Wow. It becomes quite a spectacle.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Look, funny you say that. In Ipiro, Ipiro's dotted with Venetian castles as well. I believe Preveza does that as well, but they go into a main square.
Is that right?
They don't throw them off a balcony. From what I understand, they all bring their little pots in, they're big as your hand, maybe a little bit bigger, and they all go around the square, and then at a certain time, they just smash it onto the ground.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so there you go. So it must be something to do with the Venetians or...
Well, funny you should mention that. So I did a little bit of research. The exact origin of the custom is unclear. And according to the municipality of Corfu, one popular belief is that it originated with the Venetians, who were obviously on the island between, you know, I think 14th and 18th centuries. And it was to mark the new year initially. And the Venetians would throw out their old belongings to make way for new ones in order to make a fresh start to the year. That's apparently where it sort of originates. And they just appropriated that, moved it to Easter. And now it's part of the tradition.
Very there you go. Stuff. Yeah, love it. Love all that. And it's only unique to Corfu.
That's it.
All that part. And Brevezo, I guess, do it in a smaller version. Yeah. Yeah, fascinating.
Well, we try and do it here as well on our balcony.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah. So my Bethedai usually sends us a couple of pots from Corfu.
Fantastic.
We just break them on the balcony there. I want to throw it out the window, though. I want to see it fall three stories.
Yeah, you should. I think, fuck, there's another domestic going on. Tom's pissed off Dimitra.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Classic. Good stuff. Yeah, so where my parents are from, their mum's from a place, it's called La Banitsa.
Yep.
So it's deep in this part of Suli. So it's a butter. So Suli's the main town.
Historic town.
It is. And there's all these suburbs, and this is a butter Suli. It's called La Banitsa, but they changed the name to Elataria. Actually, I've got a document to say there was 50 families that lived in La Banitsa in 1579. So there was this guy that went to Istanbul, and he got all these he bought all these documentation. So apparently the Ottomans were really good at keeping records.
Yep.
And he bought all these records and documentation. I reached out to him. I said, "Do you have anything in La Banitsa?" And he goes, "Yes, I do." And he goes, "In 1579, I've got all the names of the families that lived there." He goes, "There was no widows and 22 bachelors." And I thought, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. So that's how long this village has been running for. And the tradition hasn't really changed much in those 400 years from what my mum was saying. She goes, every year it's the same thing, and her great-grandfather who lived there and so forth did the same tradition. And they do what we do today, essentially. You know, they celebrate, they feast for 40 days with Lent. They go to church every Sunday. Mum used to say they go to the local beekeeper, and he'd collect all the wax and make these lambadas for the kids. And every Sunday for the 40 days, they'd go to church. They'd light the candle. And as soon as they left the church, they'd extinguish the candle. So they try and make it last for the 40 days.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And what else did you say? Yeah, apparently her dad used to buy them brand new clothes every Easter.
Wow.
So all the kids would get new shoes, new clothes for Easter. That was a tradition.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, I think, my godparents would always do that. It was always like, you know, buy new shoes, buy new stuff, basically. With your godparents, they usually buy the kid a labada as well. So there's always a, you know, very impressive candle of some description.
That's right.
That whole thing about renewal and new stuff, you know, kind of speaks to what we were just talking about with the botides as well. You know, out with the old, in with the new type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Interesting symbolism.
It is. Yeah. And the feast would always happen on the Sunday. So mum would say that virtually the whole hill would look like smoking from all the souvlaki happening.
Oh, how good's that?
Yeah. And I'd say, what did you all eat? She goes, it was all lamb. It was the only time of the year we'd have lamb, or twice a year they'd have lamb. And the whole hill would be lit up with all these families cooking their own version of lamb, you know, and their own ingredients and how to marinate it. But yeah, it was a great tradition. And Mum said it was the best time of the year. She loved it every year. Everyone would get together. Because after lunch, then the clarina would start playing. That's all the dancing would start happening. And yeah, she goes, it would go for at least 2 days, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah.
Everyone says that Easter over there is very different. Now that I've experienced it, they're actually right. It's on a whole other level there. Yeah. Like here it's big and it's big within the family, but it's on a whole other level when it's everyone that's celebrating at the same time.
Yeah.
And even, again, I can only speak from Corfu's perspective, but even the Catholics on Corfu, there's actually a large Catholic basilica on the island.
Mm.
They celebrate Easter at the same time as the Orthodox do because of the fact that it's such a big deal. So they actually don't observe Easter at the Catholic time. They observe it on the Orthodox calendar.
Mm. Yeah, so is that something to do with the old calendar, the Julian calendar?
Yeah, that's right. So
as opposed to the Gregorian, which is what we use today?
Yeah, so my understanding is that... So the Orthodox calendar basically... What they say is Jewish Passover basically needs to happen first before you can have Easter.
Okay.
And that's how the Orthodox do it, whereas the Catholics don't take Passover into account, which is kind of significant because when you think about the Last Supper that happens on Thursday, that was a Passover meal.
Mm.
So kind of makes sense in some, you know, in some respects that you would need to observe Passover first and then have Easter.
Mm.
I kind of agree with that.
Logical, that's for sure.
Yeah. Obviously, the calendar that we observe works astronomically now, but in terms of the religious aspect of it, yeah, I agree. You know, Passover needs to happen first before we can have Easter. It's interesting stuff.
It is, definitely. Yeah, that makes sense. And there's a reason why we have these customs and traditions, and sometimes we forget.
Mm.
We forget why we do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done, mate.
Let's look at one other tradition in Greece. The rocket wars in here. Have you seen this? It's unbelievable. Yes,
it is. It's mad.
It's insane.
It's very Greek, isn't it? They're just mad.
Okay, so for those who don't know or maybe haven't seen it, in Chios there are these two villages where there's a church, obviously, in each one, and they've obviously got a bell tower in each one. And somehow this tradition started somewhere in the Middle Ages or some, you know, somewhere along the lines where they would fire homemade rockets at the other church trying to hit their bell tower. And it's just turned into an absolute war every year. It's all in good fun. Like there's obviously a bit of banter between the two villages and whatnot. But it's absolutely insane. If you see the videos of it, mate, there are fires happening, you know, the trees are lighting up and all that sort of thing. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, it is. I've seen it. It's crazy. It's like they've lined up all these rockets and one guy just runs with a lit torch and lighting them all up and all of a sudden... A dozen rockets go flying, trying to hit their bell tower. Yeah. And I think every time they do hit a bell tower, a cheer goes up.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. It's insane. And you can imagine the firefighters would be very nervous that time of year.
Oh, yeah. They? They're on standby. I saw a video where basically they had the fire engine somewhere and someone was calling back. I think the fire engine was stationed somewhere in between the two villages and someone called that a tree had caught fire. Apparently, this fire engine couldn't move from where it was. It was sort of, you know, closed in or whatever the case is. Anyway, by the time they got there, the tree had already... It already burned. It was gone.
Singed.
It was coal by the time they got there.
Classic.
They make these homemade rockets and apparently there's a, you know, people are experimenting all the time to see what the right recipe and the right, you know, portion of charcoal versus...
Gunpowder.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I remember someone said that there's charcoal in it.
Okay.
They grind everything down to a fine powder.
Mm-hmm.
We won't give instructions on how to make it on the show because we don't encourage that sort of thing. But yeah, effectively, people just make as many rockets as they can and they just start firing them at the opposing church.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a great spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, and they always record it, you know, and it always gets posted around the world. Just amazing of... a spectacle of all these rockets from one end to another and everyone's cheering and people are dodging them. I don't understand how no one gets hurt out of this.
They ask people over there like, oh yeah, have there been any injuries? And people are like, nah, it's all right. And then you've always got that one bloke who's like, oh, if you know what you're doing, there's no injuries.
It's like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. This is the exact there, mate.
Says the guy with one eye.
Yeah. Can you imagine doing something like that here?
Nah, I can't. Get arrested.
Work health and safety, you know, public public safety.
Yeah, no, doesn't exist.
Imagine the insurance on an event like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to fire, you know, 300 rockets in, you know, into the opposing suburb.
Yeah. Oh, they're mad. And that's the thing. And then once that finishes, they just get into their festivities, don't they?
That's it.
Start drinking. Hitting the ouzo.
It's the way to do it.
And yeah, so alcohol. So I'm just reading here. So actually, my mum was reminding me, in Lubenitsa, they'd make all their red wine and then they'd have all this ouzo. So they'd drink what we drink, mate.
Really?
Ouzo's the drink. Fantastic. At Easter time. How good's that?
Well, see, we're upholding Easter traditions.
Yeah, exactly.
Just another reason to drink more ouzo.
Yeah.
Another really interesting thing about Easter in Greece is the look of Santorini during Easter. I don't know if you've ever seen it at night, you know, with all these people holding candles, you know, all these villages, you know, sort of dotted along the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it would look similar everywhere else as well. But that sort of contrast between the white houses lit up by candlelight and people doing their processions and all that sort of thing, it is unbelievable.
Oh, I could imagine. It's a beautiful island, the best of times, but having it lit up with candles, it would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's your theory on candles, mate? Do you have like a little cup holder when you're sitting there for an hour?
Mate, I'm cheating now. I'm cheating because IKEA has these great little lanterns.
Okay.
So you get one of those for like, you know, $8 or whatever it is.
Getting soft.
I am, mate, I am. But, you know, it makes the transport home easier.
Yeah, it does.
You know, because once you put it in there, you know, you've got your either a little tea light or a little candle, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is hold this little lantern there and there's no problem. Whereas back in the day, as you well know, you'd get in the car, you'd be getting weird looks from cops on the way home and, you know, getting pulled over. That sort of thing. It's like, why have you got an open flame in your car?
Yeah.
You know, but now, you know, it's pretty safe. You just keep it in your little lantern and it's not going to blow out. You know, that whole, you know, that anxiety of going home and thinking, oh my God, if this goes out, it's bad luck.
Yeah. Can't have that.
Yeah.
We've had all this good luck.
I know, right?
Kind of, that one bad luck thing was wipe everything out.
Can undo everything.
That's right. Yeah. What blows me away is all the elder generation who sit there and hold a candle. And
again, waxes. The season ticket holders.
Yeah, the season ticket holders, wax going all over their hand. They don't even flinch. 80-year-old ladies, it's nothing. Well, if they always me voice, it's okay.
Well, actually, interestingly, I don't know if you've ever seen this. So you know that the flame that's passed around basically comes from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which they say lights spontaneously in the tomb of Christ every year. They say to you that when that flame comes out each year, I don't know if you've ever seen
I've actually been there.
Were you there for it?
No, not for it, but yeah, I'll tell you a story in a second.
Okay.
I'll tell you a story. Yeah.
So what they say is basically when that comes out, people start passing this flame around and sharing it around. It doesn't burn you. So there's people there touching the flame and doing all that sort of stuff and putting it on their face and stuff, and they swear blind that you can't get burnt with it.
Didn't we do that when we were kids? You'd run your finger across the flame. Sometimes you try and put it out with your finger to show how strong you were.
Yeah. In fairness, I haven't seen anyone sort of hold their hand right in the flame. There's always a little bit of separation, but that's what they say.
Wow.
But we don't get the fresh flame every year. It's from last year, apparently. So we've got the flame from last year.
Oh, do we? Okay.
I think that's the way it works.
Behind.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Whereas in Greece,
mm-hmm.
the flame comes from Jerusalem on a presidential jet.
Wow.
They're very serious about it. Yeah. In a lantern. Not like an IKEA lantern, but a proper one.
Okay. I'm sure it would be. Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it happens every year. There's a band there
to
greet it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blay or Fosh. Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's a big deal.
It is. Yeah, look, it's an amazing place, the Holy Sepulchre Church. I went there years ago. You walk in, the Greek priests everywhere.
Yeah.
You walk in and the first thing you see is a slab. Everyone cries out. Oh, I didn't know. So I didn't get involved in part of the tour. So I just walked in on my own. And I could see people crying over this slab. And there was an American tourist there. And he was my guide. He's an old guy. He goes, I've been here several times. I go, what's happening here? And he goes, well, this when Jesus died, they actually put him on this slab and they cleaned him up.
Right.
I said, you're kidding. Okay. So that was the first stage. You walk through into the church. You see that. And then everyone walks over to this. It looked like a monument where someone can stand in it. And they said, well, that's where Mary stood watching these people clean her son. I thought, wow. So you go to that stage as well. There's a priest there. And then you walk a little bit, so you head towards the stairs. And as you get towards the stairs, you see a glass plate behind this wall, and there was a crack in it. And he goes, that's proof that when Jesus died, the earth cracked. I thought, wow, okay. So mm-hmm. you see that, and you walk up the stairs, and then you join this queue. Supposedly, the queue leads to where Jesus was crucified.
Right.
So they say they've still got the hole. So I joined the queue, got there, and see this hand, Tom?
Mm-hmm.
This hand went in the hole, mate.
So wrong hand, blessed. Mate. Your left hand?
Yeah, I use my left hand. Left-handed.
Yeah.
So I went in. Again, there was another priest. It was a big bucket of money. So apparently yep. you put money in as well. And I took a photo. Yeah, but it was all rendered. It seemed nice, but that was, they say that was right. where the hole was. Yeah,
okay.
Where Jesus got crucified. And underneath was proof that the earth cracked.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was
interesting
really,
stuff, isn't it?
It is. And the whole time you'd see people, like groups of people like Filipinos and Americans and Canadians and all different types of countries and religions coming through, and they were actually holding crosses, and women were crying and so forth.
Yeah,
yeah, amazing place. You've got to check it out. But yeah, that was.
I can't wait to go.
Yeah, and they do it really good. You know, it's presented really well, and it's a fascinating city, Jerusalem. My God,
yeah.
There's so much going on there. I could talk forever on that stuff. Yeah. But yeah, that was it. That was the Holy Sepulchre. And it's funny you just mentioned that.
Yeah.
You just brought back all those memories.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, let's come back to how we celebrate Easter in the diaspora. Let's talk about the fashion parade.
Okay, well.
We spoke about it with Mary a few weeks ago, with Mary Custis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should actually have a listen to that, what we actually discussed there.
Yeah, let's play that.
I know for me, growing up, church was the place where I would wear my best outfit, and I'm not talking about what my mother wanted me to wear. I was very fashion forward, and it was my little runway, you know, walking down the aisle for me was God's runway. And I'm a bum, you know, and that's where I went to show my wares and my hairs. And, you know, I pitied anyone that didn't quite get where I was at, because I thought I was pioneering. You know, I was always big on fashion. I still am. I love it.
And it still is like that. I'm sure it still is like that.
It is, you know.
It's a fashion parade going to church.
100%.
But it was hard, especially in our day. We didn't understand what they were saying.
Yeah,
exactly.
Did we? Now, at least, like, they'll say stuff in English and we're getting our heads around it. But certainly in those days, I didn't know what was going on. So I remember, you know, comics were really big, and all the little kids would sit at the back reading comics because there were no iPads.
Yep.
But certainly you had to find something to amuse yourself with, or, you know, get a bit of status from.
I mean, she's right, isn't she? I mean, it really is a fashion parade every year, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You got to pick your best outfit. I guess it goes back to the story of my mum's ancestors. You know, you buy new clothes for Easter, and that's what they would do to attend this fashion parade, as now we know as Easter.
Yeah. It's not just the women, though. The girls are, you know, dolled up like laternes, as they say in Greek.
Yeah.
You know, wearing their absolute best. Even the guys, I mean, there's, you know, some of the suits, pretty schmick.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Hugo Boss suits and so forth. Yeah, they don't muck around at Easter time, that's for sure. Yeah, and the women, yeah, it's like they're dressed up for a nightclub, aren't they?
Yeah.
Let alone church. You know, their hair done, you know, they go to the hairdressers and so forth. But they say that's where you can find your potential bride or groom.
You ever heard that?
Well, that's how they used to say back in the day. You know, everyone dresses up really nice. Davris galope vist in ecclesia.
You
know, find a good person from church. So.
Like Mary said, to show my wares and my hairs.
Yeah. She's a classic.
Oh, dear. Good stuff. Well, yeah, look, it still very much is a little bit like that. So much of what makes Easter time so special is the food and the smells. You know, the really good stuff is obviously the meat on the Sunday, you know, obviously because of Nistia. But let's start with tzvudeki. For those sweet who don't know, yes, Easter sweet bread. It's like kind of like a brioche, which is plaited. Does your mum make it? Have you ever made it? Do you have someone in the family that makes it?
My mum.
Yep.
She makes it for everyone. She'll probably make 20 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. And sometimes they put an egg in the middle.
Yes.
Red egg in the middle. Every family gets distributed. And they actually swap tzvudekia.
Yeah.
So one family will cook some, give one to theirs, and then everyone tastes it. did a good one this year.
Yeah.
Or yeah, Thea down the road did a really good one this year. Or your 2019 sort of gig was the best I've ever had. And
it is a bit of a competition, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. They should join that Easter show that we have. You know, they have that bread baking competition.
That is a top idea.
Mate, they do well. They do well.
Jeez, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, they do. They do all that sort of stuff at the Easter show, don't they?
They do.
Like your pie bakes and your jams and all that sort of stuff. Tsureki, mate. That's the way to do it.
We could do one. We're onto something here.
Yeah. Maybe we should have our own stand there. Uzo Talk Tsureki contest.
Yes, exactly. Hand pick half a dozen and have a winner. Uzo Talk champ.
Oh, Tsureki
champ.
We're gonna put on a lot of weight during that time, mate.
Yeah.
It's all about it being light though.
Mm.
A lot of people make it, and because they you know, they knead it a little bit too much, or they, you know, leave it in the machine too much,
mm-hmm.
it comes out and it's heavy.
Mm.
You know, it's too dense.
Mm.
My wife actually does a really good job of it every year because mm-hmm. she's got a bit of a background as a pastry chef.
Yeah.
Which makes it
always helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever it's really light and fluffy,
mm-hmm.
that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to her, you know, you put too much makhlepi in it, which is that, you know, it's kind of signature smell.
Okay.
And it makes it a little bit too bitter. Put too much makhlepi in it and you've ruined it, apparently. So it's this sort of balance between makhlepi, masticha, and all the other smells.
Yeah. Look, the best time to eat it, for me, it's straight out of the oven.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2-3 days. It's still good, but that's the best time to have it. It doesn't get better. Sort of... because it's all natural ingredients as well. It deteriorates in flavour and taste the more you leave it. But I tend to put it in the microwave. I've had it for 3-4 days. Chuck it in the microwave. It's probably the best you're going to get it. Oh, I love it.
You want me to change your life?
Yes.
Okay. Cut a piece.
Yep.
Put it in the toaster for a little bit.
Toaster.
And then put Nutella on it.
Ooh. Okay.
I've just ruined it for you.
Is that a diaspora thing?
It must be. Well, look, in Greece, you know what? The big thing over there, there's obviously big companies like Terkenli, based in Thessaloniki,
mm-hmm.
who do tsurekia,
yeah,
and they cover them in chocolate. You can get them here now as well.
Okay.
That's a huge thing over there. And you get it all year round.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So they make tsurekia, they plait it, they do whatever it, you know, they've got to do to it.
Yeah.
And they cover it in chocolate. It is fantastic.
Okay.
It's the greatest thing you're ever going to have. There's other people here, for example, who do like an apple pie filling inside it as well, like a cherry filling, you know, so it's inside each of the plats. And then they cover it with a, you know, either ganache or something along those lines. It is unbelievable.
Fantastic. So they've modernized the tsureki
now. You got to get that into your life, mate.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I'm a traditionalist.
But
I like the sound of all that.
I think that's what I'm going to get you for Easter, mate. I'm going to get you a tsureki that's covered in chocolate.
Fantastic.
I'm going to change your life.
Probably, yeah. Put on weight, mate. Thanks for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, beautiful. And what about kurabiedes and all that sort of stuff? Kuludia? Oh, yeah. Does your mum make all that and Dimitra make all that?
My wife does all that sort of stuff. Mum doesn't really do the sweets.
Mm-hmm.
That's more my wife's domain. Dimitra always does, yeah. She usually does batch of kurabiedes and, you know, kuluria, all that sort of stuff, as well as the tsureki.
Yeah.
That makes up her plate, you know, the plate that you give out to everyone.
Okay,
you know,
beautiful.
It's always fantastic.
Yeah.
Always.
Do you ever have the kurabiedes shirt where you got the white dust down your shirt?
The cocaine shirt.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, of course.
At 10 hours, it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Say hello to my little friend.
That's right. One bite and you wear it all down your shirt.
That's it.
That's a good kurabiedes, that one.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now, she's good like that because she makes, you know, the actual the shortbread
mm-hmm.
is really buttery. So it's this combination. Again, it's really light.
Yep.
You know, so you've got this sort of light shortbread, short crust or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Covered in the, you know, in the zakariakni. You don't need tea, you don't need coffee, just by itself.
Yeah. Beautiful. Far, I'm actually salivating now. I could have used one of them with my coffee this morning.
Yeah.
Hey? Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then all the men get the adni out, eh?
That's it.
I think we already covered that, didn't we, in the barbecue episode.
If you need some tips on how to do your souvla or your barbecue or whatever, check out the barbecue episode that we did a few months back.
what was it, episode 3, I think it was.
Good episode. We got a little bit loose on that episode.
We did.
The Barbayani was flowing thick and fast.
Yeah. Did we come to an agreement in the end? I think it ended up being that the quality of the produce.
Yeah.
So the better the quality, the less ingredients you need.
Absolutely. When you've got good produce, don't ruin it with too much stuff. Go sparingly.
Yeah.
Always use a, you know, good salt and pepper.
Good origani.
Good origani, but don't overdo it with things like garlic and all that sort of stuff. The only thing that we didn't really agree on was the olive oil.
Okay.
Remember?
Yeah. And so, origani before or after.
Yeah. So my family and my Befero, who, you know, runs a restaurant and all that sort of thing, refuses to put oil on it because he's like, this is a fatty animal for a start, and will only put oregano on it after cutting it. So it's cooked. Butchers it all up, you know, ready for serving, and we'll put oregano on it afterwards. Mm. And lavo lemono if you want after that. You know what I mean? So,
I hear paprika is very popular as well. A couple of islands I know, Limnos and so forth, they love adding the paprika on there.
Yeah.
You'll be paprika fan?
On chicken, the kodoshuvli or something like that.
Yeah.
Haven't really tried it on lamb though.
Yeah, I've had a couple of lamb stuvli in my time where they've spread paprika all over it, oregano, you know, heaps of salt, pepper. They actually put a hard cheese in the belly of it before they serve it.
Oh, really?
Okay. Garlic and onions and so forth, and they stab the inside of it. Actually, they stab it right through.
Yeah, right.
So when the cheese melts, it goes right through the meat. And so forth. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It is. And
we've got some good traditions, mate.
We do. We do. We love it. Just remind you of the story as well. A couple of years ago, we're having a chat about this, how you do your souvla and so forth. There's a family in the 80s. So back then, remember the souvla, it was all done by hand.
Yes.
You had to wheel it around. You had to rotate. Use your left hand, your right hand. And then a couple of, you know, bright sparks. I thought, you know what? Let's just put a motor to it.
He must have been Greek.
Of course, you know, the Greek engineer hat comes on.
Yep.
Yeah, we can do this better, you know.
Yep.
So there's a couple of guys back in the 80s who had a really good idea of putting a motorized mechanism on this spit. And one of the guys had a old washing machine he was getting rid of. And he goes, you know what? Grab the motor from the washing machine. We'll chuck it on here. So a week before Easter, these three blokes got together and they worked it out. They ripped out this washing machine motor and they put it on and they tested it.
Yep.
You know, like a good engineer, you test it first, and they tested it. Like and they were, you know, very pleased with themselves and winking at each other, and they were fist pumping and high fiving. I think we've worked it out here.
Yeah.
Again, this is in the 80s. Back then it was all still done by hand, and motorized was sort of coming in the late 80s, early 90s. But these guys went one step further, got this washing machine motor, all happened, it was all ready to go. Anyway, so all the Easter festivities kicked in. Sunday morning, they all got together. They did the charcoal. They marinated the lamb. Good, you know, 15-kilo size lamb. Yep. Put it on. They turned on the power and the switch, and then things started to turn automatically. The whole group that were there, the women, everyone was impressed. They go, oh, my God, how good is this? The guys are cheering, sipping on the ruzo. How smart are we?
Where's this going?
Yeah. Anyway, so it went for about half hour. Then they switched off the power.
Yep.
They readjusted it again, touched it up again, switched on the power again, and then they left it. So it takes, what, good 3 hours?
Yep.
4 hours sometimes? Anyway, so this thing started rotating. It was going good. They're all sitting around now and then at the trapezi. They'd look over and they'd admire their work. They go, how good's this? And they'd look at their mates. They'd wink at each other. Name's Xerta, my mate. 2 hours into it, they just, as they're sitting around, they started looking at this thing and it started spinning quicker.
Yeah.
They started going quicker. All of a sudden, this thing was out of control. It was spinning so fast that they all jumped out of their seats, trying to grab the handle, trying to stop it. It lasts for about 30 seconds, and this thing started just to break apart.
Yep.
It started flying off, and the thing just collapsed. There was meat flinging everywhere. Everyone got scared. Go, what? This thing's possessed. What's happened?
It's bad luck.
Yeah, it's bad luck. And they're all freaking out, they're all scratching their heads. And by the time they worked out, they could just switch off the power. This thing had broken apart. You know, the leg of lamb went flying off into the backyard. It had collapsed. You know, charcoal fell on the ground. And they worked out that this washing machine motor
was on spin mode.
Was on spin mode, oh. Yeah. They had an adjustment. Well, I don't know what they did. They just grabbed the motor and it got to spin cycle and the thing just kicked in. Geez. You know, 2 hours into it, the spin cycle kicked in and this lamb was just spinning 100 miles an hour and just broke apart.
Outstanding.
It was so funny, but the way the guy described it, and they had a dog in the backyard. And
he must have been happy.
Yeah, the dog was happy and the women are all freaking out. They tried to salvage some of it. Apparently they did. And ended up being, you know, Arnistel food and all.
Like yeah, they, of course.
The salvage some of that. Oh, fuck, chuck what's left in the oven. Yeah. But yeah, it was the funniest sight. Yeah. And they're all so proud of themselves, winking. All of a sudden, this thing just went out of control like it was possessed. Yeah, it was a funny sight. But anyway, that was that one Easter. I'll never forget, will they?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm surprised nobody did it with a drill back then, you know, like using like a power drill or something like that to do the rotation.
Yeah, it's funny how times change. You can go to Bunnings and get one for $20 now.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's good ones at Bunnings, actually. For, I think it's about $70 for a little jumbuck, you know, a little souvla. You won't fit a whole lot of meat on it, but you can definitely do a good souvli on that or a chicken or a leg of lamb or something like that.
Definitely.
Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, you've got your motor in there.
Yeah, definitely. We're modernised, mate.
Yeah. What about the red eggs? We spoke a little bit about this with Mary. What's the trick?
Yeah.
The competition is insane every year. It's furious competition between the family.
Yeah, look, you know what? Brings great memories, actually. I remember my mum would be in the kitchen. She'd go in the backyard and she'd grab leaves and she'd grab stockings. And the leaves would go on the egg and then she'd wrap stockings around the eggs. And she'd put red dye through them.
Okay.
And then she'd take the stocking off and you'd have this beautiful image of a leaf on the side of the egg. Yeah, that was, I remember those days. And I used to help my mum with it as well, put them in the stockings and tying it up and
I always
forth.
Wondered how they did that because my family never did those patterns.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I had an aunt who, I had an aunt who used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I never got to see how they actually did that. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you just brought back all these fond memories. And Mum would sit there a week out making, you know, shitload of eggs. And there was always red, I remember. And then now and then she broke it up, put a bit of green in there. Mm-hmm. And then one year we had like blue. I thought, wow, what does that mean, Mum? She's like, it was on sale. Break. The colour was on sale. Yeah. But yeah, I remember, the old Christos Anesti and Alithos Anesti. Yeah. Yeah, the technique. Well, they say the technique, if you squeeze the end of it with your fingers, it makes it harder.
What I've found, I don't know if there's any science behind this, but it's usually the darker eggs that are the strongest.
Okay, because they've got more a coat of paint over the top.
Maybe something like that. Maybe they absorb more of the dye and it thickens it somehow, but...
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen one of the lighter eggs be the victorious egg.
Nah.
It's always one of the dark ones. Dark and small.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. That's dark and small.
That's my approach.
Yeah, it does make sense.
Or use the wooden one.
The wooden one, yes. That's right. I think my brother tried to do that 1 year.
Yeah. How did it go?
Yeah. He just beat everyone until he worked out what he was doing.
Yeah.
He said, hey, cheat.
There's always the allegation.
Yeah.
There's always the allegation at the table. Let me see it.
Yeah.
My Uncle Harry. Oh, my God. If you've got an egg that's working, he'll say, okay, give us a look at it. You'll throw, you know, you'll put your hand out and he'll just grab your hand and crush it.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. Maybe we should explain to the non-Greek listeners out there what this is all about.
Yeah. So we've got this little competition at the dinner table. Two red eggs, one pointy end up. So, you know, one person says Christ is risen, the other one responds with truly is risen, and you sort of, hit each other's egg with it.
The one that doesn't crack is the winner.
Correct.
Yeah, and you got to go point to point, and then, as we say, bum to bum.
Yeah.
Yeah, because apparently the bum is more solid.
The bum is the softer part.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's the one that's most likely to crack.
Yeah, and how funny is it after that competition ends, you got all these cracked eggs.
Yeah.
If you lose, you just grab another one. You don't eat it.
Yeah, that's it. My dad would always take the eggs. He'd make like an egg salad sort of thing, you know.
Beautiful.
Just put your mayo in it and whatever. You put that in sandwiches afterwards, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
It's a good way to use them.
It is, yeah.
But you take them to work and everyone's looking at you saying, what's wrong with that egg?
Yeah.
Like got these red eggs sitting on your desk.
Yeah, and sometimes the dye seeps through.
Yeah.
So you got the egg white with like a red stripe through
it. Yeah, correct. I always loved freaking people out at work, you know, when they were, you know, bring a couple of red eggs out or whatever. It's like, what's going on there? You know, you'd have like dye on your hands and your hands are covered in red.
And it got quite competitive. I guess our family's very competitive as well. So we'd always try and win and get the shits if we didn't win.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, like your Uncle Harry, we'd have people in our family would, you know, just blow up and crush your egg. You know, spoiled sport.
Yeah.
Cheated.
Oh, dear.
Love all those.
Well, yeah. Can't wait for it this year.
Actually, speaking of food, you haven't touched on this. What about Mayeritsa?
Oh, yeah. Mayeritsa.
Gorgoretsi.
Yeah.
You like the Mayeritsa?
Me personally, love it.
Okay.
Love it. But it is an acquired taste, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
For those who don't know, Mayeritsa is effectively gut soup. So the lamb that's been slaughtered for...
Lamb gut soup.
Yeah. Yes. The lamb that's been slaughtered for the souvla, for the spit, you basically take the offal from it and you're making it into a soup. And not everyone enjoys it. That's like the midnight dish for Easter.
It is.
Your mum makes it?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, not now. We don't really eat it, but yeah, she used to make it.
Yep.
She used to say it takes forever to make because you got to clean it and clean it and overclean it and clean it again. And and I remember, after church, you come in Saturday with your candle, midnight, put the candle in, and the Mayeritsa would come out. I could never eat it.
Really?
Yeah,
didn't like it?
Never. Yeah, my brother used to eat it. Mum and dad, me, never got into it.
Really?
I tried one year, but just that image of, because I used to watch her make it. If you didn't see what was in it, you probably would eat it.
Yeah.
But I would watch her make it and clean it, and it sort of turned me off as a kid.
Yeah.
Because mum and dad used to get a whole fucking lamb. Used to chop it up in front of us, you know, and I used to watch, and they used to go to the abattoir and bring it in, and the head sometimes was still attached.
Yeah.
And they'd eat the head.
Yep.
The head is for the, I guess, the head of the family.
Yes.
And it's a delicacy, you know, the eyeballs, the brain, the cheek.
Yeah, I could never do that.
I remember one year I saw it and this thing was staring at me. You know, you could still see the teeth and the eyeballs and like, oh my God, like a picture a little five-year-old, you know, six-year-old, I'd mentally scarred looking at this thing. I go, this thing's looking at me. I'd have nightmares about it.
Mate, my granddad was big time into that. He loved it. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. He loved it.
Yeah, it was an honour too to have that.
Yeah.
You know, if the patriarch of the house would have to eat it.
Yeah. So the other thing that they do with the offal is obviously kokoretsu. Do you eat that?
No.
Really?
It looks like great. Either. It looks good. But once, because I know what it is, I don't eat it.
Mate, it is fantastic. So, I mean, for those who don't know, kokoretsu is basically everything that we've just spoken about. So usually like hearts, kidneys, liver, and the adero, so the intestine, basically. You put it on a skewer and basically wrap it all up in this intestine. And look, it sounds horrible and you'd think that it would taste pretty bad. But it's all in the cleaning. Now, there's a whole procedure to get this right, and especially with the intestine, you need to turn it inside out, wash it with lemon juice, and lemons. I mean, I've seen my mum and my pethera doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and the joke in the family, the joke in the family is that's what you do with the You know what I mean? So what happens is they do that. You wrap it all up. You use a bit of kol fat as well, and put that on the shula.
Mm.
I love it. I can't get enough of it. Yeah. You know, it's so rich and fatty and just beautiful.
I love seeing it on the souvla because it just reminds me of the tradition. However, I just think it's a waste of space on the souvla. I'd rather be putting something else on there.
Yeah,
but I can understand. It's a tradition. Yeah, it's good to have it on there. But look, I'm the one with the sitting around with a fork, peeling off the bets off the lamb. Oh my God. Yeah. That's me.
Love it.
Yeah, I couldn't do the kokoretsu. But look, it's a tradition, and it's good that you enjoy it, you know?
I love it. I love it.
We'll see. Maybe you can get me to try it one time.
Well, next time we make it, I'm definitely going to give you some.
Oh, a little bit.
We'll film it. We'll film Nick's reaction to kokoretsu.
Yeah. Well, it's, I guess time heals all wounds, I guess. So I haven't seen Mum make it anymore, so I tend to forget about it.
Oh, we've got to do it this year. We have to do it. Good stuff.
Love it.
There's so much we can talk about, but I think we've kind of covered it for now. We want to wish everyone a Kalia Anastasia. Happy Easter. Hopefully you sort of listen to this podcast in the lead up to your Easter celebration this year, wherever you are in the world. all of our listeners in Australia, in the US, and the UK, Canada. And Greece, Canada. Yeah, absolutely. All of Zambia. Those countries. Zambia.
Kenya.
Yeah. All those countries we've listened to. However you celebrate, we want to know about it. So email us at uzotalk@outlook.com. Comment on one of our social media platforms, at uzotalk or at @uzo_talk on Instagram. We want to know, how do you celebrate Easter? What are your traditions?
Love it, Tom. And look, happy Easter, everyone. Enjoy the festive season. It's a great time of year. And yeah, looking forward to all your feedback. And it's great reminiscing as well, Tom. You brought back all these great memories.
Yeah, it's fantastic reminiscing, Nick. I mean, it's all about the kids now, obviously, trying to make it really impressive and special for the kids. It's all about the Easter eggs. It's all about the chocolate, all about the tzurekia. And, you know, we'll sort of instill the traditions of going to church in them as well and pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we'll be there. We'll be there at Cogra Church. My mum will be there with her 7 grandkids.
Fantastic. That's what it's about.
The tradition will live on definitely in our family.
Well, guys, thanks again for tuning in. Nick, thank you very much.
Tom, it's been a pleasure.
As always.
Coffee went down well.
Yes.
I think we're ready for an Uzo.
Absolutely. Next episode.
Okay,
it's
mate.
It's a big one.
It is. Oh, we've got a couple of big ones coming up. Looking forward to it.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Okay. Happy Easter, everyone.
Καλή Ανάσταση.
Ακολουθήστε μας στο Soundees, στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcasts και στο Google Podcasts.